Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen, coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining us here for Rated G Radio. I am your host, Garrett Miller, and for the next hour, we are coming to you live. And in just a couple of moments, we're going to have Australian author Tanya Elizabeth joining the show. And she is the, she's going to tell us all about herself, but she's got a fantastic trilogy out called Eternal Grace. It's available on Amazon. If you're listening to the show live tonight or on demand, you can always check out Tanya's author page on Amazon and just click the links and buy her books automatically. I'm a big fan of supporting the cause of all of our guests, and especially when we have somebody who is as brilliant and talented as Tanya. Go out and support the cause tonight. You'll get, you know, three or four books that were really, really cool, and she's going to tell you all about them in just a couple of moments. I also want to thank our fine folks at West Star Radio for being live with us in the United Kingdom today on your drive time home. Thank you very, very much for spending your next hour with us. Hope traffic is treating you well and you're sharing the roadway with other courteous drivers as you begin your journey home or, well, wherever your journey is taking you. Without further ado, though, I want to welcome Tanya Elizabeth to the show and thank you for being my VIP special guest star. How are you, my dear?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you very much to yourself for having me, Garrett.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I am always a big fan of you giving the big shout-out to those who connect the dots. So Mary Lou in Brisbane, I want to say thank you. I'm not sure if she's listening live tonight or not. I know that she's in the middle of a big move from one location to another. So if she chimes in or pops in, we'll certainly bring her on. But I know that I have great admiration for Mary Lou and also for the fact that she's so wonderful in getting us connected tonight, too. So thanks, Mary Lou, wherever you are.
Yes, thank you, Mary Lou.
So, Tanya, do me a favor, since I haven't had the we're going to get a chance to actually visit and chit-chat next week, so this is our official time together, but for everybody who is new to your name that's listening tonight, can you do us a favor and kind of tell us a little bit about yourself before we kind of do a deep dive into all the cool things that you're doing here?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you said, my name is Tanya Elizabeth. First and foremost, I always like to start with the fact that I'm a single mum of three beautiful children. I have a son who is 12, and I have twin daughters who are 10.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I am very lucky. They're blessed children. But beyond that, I am an author, and I have published The Tear of Eternal Grace series, which is a three-book series. I am also working on the spin-off series currently, The Tear of Nexus, which is to come also. And another one, but we'll go into that a bit later. And besides that, I'm a columnist for an Australian publication, The White Light Magazine, and that's where I'm able to bring a little bit more of my spiritual intent into my work also. And then I'm also a motivational speaker at quite a few different engagements as well, and have been invited on, you know, many radio shows and done different literary events and so forth as well.
Wow. So now my obvious question, mother of three, all of the writing that you do, when do you find time to sleep?
What's that?
Okay. Fair enough. So now, it also says on your Amazon bio that you're a prominent member of the Gold Coast Writers Association. What can you tell us a little bit about that group as well? Or is that
because
I'm always a fan of any type of, you know, forums where people are able to get together and share their talents.
Yeah, absolutely, and it is. It's wonderful. So, you know, once a month you have all these wonderful writers get together, and, you know, we share ideas and sort of inspire one another as well. And inspire the community also. So we're actually coming up to the Gold Coast Writers Association yearly event, where we have a lot of guest speakers come in from all over the world and different things. So, as I said, to motivate and to bring forth our works and inspire new writers as well to come out and, you know, to have the courage to bring forth their own ideas.
Well, one of the things that I like to do on the show is have authors on the show, because we have a huge following across the United States and also, I say, around the world. But, you know, we've got regular listeners in New Zealand, Australia, England, Scotland, Finland, Canada, Israel, South Africa. So we've got people who are listening all over, and a lot of them, and I have no idea why, are writers. I think it's just, it's fantastic that they choose to listen into a talk show, but we've got a lot of writers that are either budding writers or seasoned authors that have works published, but they love to hear the stories from other working authors like yourself, Tanya.
Yeah.
So I think that's really fascinating to have people that, because, you know, it's very interesting to me that all of these people with such different and diverse backgrounds have found the same calling in life, that they want to become writers. What have you always wanted to write?
Oh, look, I've been writing since I was about 11. For me, it was as a young teen, I was, you know, We all battle with our own little, you know, egoisms and different things growing through our teens, and that was my release. That was my safe place. So I began writing stories about my own life and just eventually, you know, took that into something more. But I did put it away for a short period of time, and it wasn't until I hit my later years that I decided, I found the courage to actually allow the public to see my work. Prior to that, I hadn't had that courage within, and that would also be one of the reasons why book one within the Tear of Eternal Grace series was also very much a catharsis for myself. So although I write as fantasy fiction, there is so much of who I am within that story itself.
So what was it, or who was it, that got you to say, you know what, I'm going to kind of open up my private self and share some of my writing? And how did that end up leading to book one?
Yeah. You know what? It really, there was no one in particular. I'd say I had read one of Scovel Shinn's books, and that in itself sort of, it was a big turning point for me. And something within just told me that it was time. And I remember sitting by the pool at home, and this idea came to me of how I could bring some stories of my own life to inspire people as well, but to allow them a way of being able to lose themselves within a fantasy element. And that was using the fairy. So that was my whole point. I wanted to create a story that not only enabled the reader to, like I said, lose themselves in an enchanting realm of magic, love, betrayal, deceit, all those, you know, adventure, all the emotions under the sun, but to also begin a journey of self-discovery, just as I did myself.
Mm. How fun. How long did it take you to write the first book?
The first book took myself, it was about a year, writing the story, and then obviously you've got to go through the whole rewrites and the editing process.
Oh, yeah.
And so forth after that. So that's the tedious part. Writing the story was, but the second and third book didn't take me quite as long to write. By that stage,
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, no, by that stage, I had really connected with my higher self as well. And, you know, yeah, I was very much into the groove of it. And with the fairies themselves, I guess they started to bring their own essence and speak to me. And that's what I was able to bring through. So I was able to bring through their story and entwine it within my own.
So going back to book one, because it's, to me, I think it's just a fascinating decision for somebody to sit down and say, you know what, I'm going to write a book. So did you have any, like, schooling or training on how to write a book, or you just had read so much you'd go, okay, I know a formula, or you've just sat down and said, I've got these characters that need to come out and it's going to tell my story the way I want to tell it? What was your process like?
Yeah, when I was a little bit younger, I had done a literary course, but again, I put it aside and really, and I became, honey, I did, you know, I ended up becoming the mother and the wife and went through that whole process at that time. So I guess what I did is I put any of my own dreams and aspirations aside to become a woman who I believed I was meant to have become. losing a little bit of my own self in the meantime. So that's what this book really enabled me to do. It enabled me to find me again.
How much fun was that? Now, when you sat down to do the book, was this a full-time... Well, yeah, it's scary, too, but, you know, I think sometimes you take on these projects and they turn into these things where you start diving headfirst into them and then realize, I was meant to do this. So when you got through book one, did you have any type of book deal put together? How did you end up getting it published?
Yep. Well, originally I had published through a traditional publisher, and unfortunately they didn't do right by myself. So I was already writing book two, and I had to actually then go through legal rights to buy back my rights. And then, yes.
Wow.
So then I decided to self-publish. So
okay.
I then went out on a limb and thought, you know what, I'm going to self-publish. And I've never looked back. So granted, I am presently in a process of going... obviously back into the publishers and so forth with different negotiations. But I, at that point in time, I just knew it was the right thing for me. And I knew and I don't regret it. Like, it was such a learning curve because you really have to learn the ins and outs of every element of the business. And it was such an amazing journey. Incredible.
Well, I admire you for saying it's an amazing journey. For some people, it makes them pull their hair out. For somebody who is a creative type, oftentimes doing the business side of the business is something really detracts from the joy of being whatever your craft is. In this case, you're a fantastic author. Doing the groundwork to learn the business so you now know what's going on, how difficult was that for you, or did you enjoy it?
Honestly.
Okay.
Look, I'll be honest. It isn't
sure.
It isn't the fun, you know, the fun, yay, hands up in the air part of what we do. The writing is what we, you know, it's what I was born to do. And, you know, to be able to, like my father always says to me, when I'm in my writing zone, is I literally do live in, and as all writers do, we live in two separate worlds. You have the work, you know, the life that you live here, and then you've got the world that you're creating. And so that, to me, is incredibly enjoyable. But, no, the other elements of it, they have their times, yes, where they're very tedious. And, as you said, some of us do want to rip our hair out at times, and that could even be an understatement at times. But, yes.
Well, you know, I suppose...
It
was probably, you know, there are pros and cons with everything. You know, I suppose, you know, a lot of the authors that I talk to that do the self-publishing, the overwhelming comment that they say is from a business perspective, you know, their destiny is in their own hands as far as how to market it and how to make money off of it. It's not like my destiny is in somebody else's hand who doesn't understand who I am as an artist, who doesn't get me, and they're going to take 85% of the profits, and I've spent a year doing this, and I made $1.85. So,
yeah.
You know, there's...
No, absolutely. And, you know, the biggest thing that I would say stands between any self-published author is whether you really believe in yourself and your work. You know, I see it time and time again that people, they have this whole idea of what they want to do, which is go out there and do it, but they've already failed themselves by thinking, but what if people don't like it? And... Or they start questioning themselves. They start doubting their ability to be this incredible, you know, writer and author, and to give the world something unique. And, you know, that's what is always going to make those who do succeed and those who stay a little bit more limbo in that, yeah, it's all about belief.
Absolutely. You know? 100% with you.
Yeah. So, and there's a lot of that about my stories also.
Well, I was going to say, maybe that's the perfect segue to actually start talking about Eternal Grace, your trilogy. We have The Moon Clearing, we have The Mirror's Shadow, and then The Soul's Cry. And it's All available on Amazon right now, and you can get them on Kindle tonight or today, whatever time of the world you're actually listening. And go to Tonya Elizabeth's Amazon page. I've provided the link on the show page there. If you're across the pond in the UK, just simply go to Amazon.com and look up Tonya Elizabeth, T-A-N-I-A Elizabeth, and you'll find her right there, very lovely. And you've got her four books that are prominently discovered, published, listed on the page there, and I encourage you to go do that. So tell us about the books. You know, what's the first, obviously, we, you know, there's a whole evolution that goes on here, but tell us about the book, the character, the stories, and let's dig into the meat of this.
Yeah, no. Okay, well, book one is very much, this is, as it says, it's the moon clearing. This is very much, I guess you could say it's an introduction to these people. So let's go into who we're speaking of. I know we've spoken a little bit about it, but not very much. And that's actually about the fairy. Now, when I say fairy, though, okay, there are so many wonderful stories written about the fae. And I guess, from, you know, we definitely, I'd love to believe that it's time the fairy were heard on a whole new level. And this goes on every element, but with my fairies, I wanted to kind of, I wanted you to understand that they're so very much like you and I. They're, you know, they really are, just, I guess the biggest, let me go back, the biggest difference between us and them is that their primary language is that of energy. Mm. Now, whether that be energy of, being that they're magic, or whether that be the energy of their wings, for example. Because a fairy's wings, like, okay, when most people, when I say I write about fairies, most people automatically go to the Disney depiction of, say, Pink, for example, which is a beautiful creation. I mean, myself and my daughters love Pink and all her worlds, but what I wanted to do was I wanted to bring forth a more mature fairy aspect. So with their wings, for example, their wings are literally just an extension of reinforced energy. So if you can imagine, if you have these, like we as humans have an aura, so does that of a fairy. But theirs actually extends as this incredible incandescent light from behind of them. So therefore, that's not how they fly, though, either. So how they actually fly is just by using mind and body force, being, as most of us perceive, magic.
That would seem like magic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but at the end of the day, magic is really just that. It's having complete and utter belief in the ability to be able to manipulate the energy into being able to create something. You know, we as humans could essentially do it, but unfortunately we've been brought up in a society that doesn't allow us to believe that to be so. So, yeah, whereas the fairies, that is whom they are. That is, as I said, that's the energy is their primary language. But in regards to it, the fae themselves, I mean, you're talking about angelic, incandescent, ethereal beings, you know, of absolute desire. They're eternal beings. You know, the story itself is based upon trying to find balance within the struggle of ego versus the love of oneself as well, that divine, you know, the purity of soul and spirit. They do govern themselves within the physical and spiritual connection on both their own realm and that of the earthly realm as well, but, of course, that does come with its challenges. So you have the main fairy, Tatiana Grace, and Tatiana Grace, she's basically every man's desire and every woman's want. You know, she's of strength, wisdom. She's inconceivably ravishing. She literally is just a figure of natural beauty that lives by the truth of her words. So besides the fact that she is of such beauty, she's also of such strength. You know, she's the type of woman that I know for myself, it's what I deem to be. I would love to be of that much strength and still have those vulnerabilities as well. But with her, she is the queen, and this is her story. So this is what she basically wants to tell you about her world, introduce you to herself and her people, and it comes through in this incredible story of her life. And it really is, you have your ups, your downs, you know, there's, you have your love, your loss, you have your adventures. And that's what's gorgeous about this story. And what we found is that it reaches out to such a diverse audience. You know, you've got, like I said, you've got, if you want to fall into a story of absolute adventure, you know, those epic realm journeys where, you know, you have your good versus evil, all of that is in there. If you want a story that has a romantic sort of aspect to it, well, that's in there as well. You know, if you if you're more inclined to, you know, want to fall into a spiritual and enlightenment element, all of that is within that story as well. And that's what's beautiful about it, is we found that with the Tear of Eternal Grace, it's literally reached out to such a diverse demographic of people that, you know, it is. It's just touching so many souls on different levels. If you just want to read it for the fantasy, great. Read it for the fantasy. If you want to find something deeper.
Right. You got it.
Then, you know, that's going to be in there too. And that's what I love. You know, I've heard some amazing reviews. Some of my best reviews come from men. So, you know, and for me, being that I write about fairies, that's saying something.
Sure.
Because when you're reading it, in a sense, you almost forget that they are even fairies. You know, you just get lost in them and their realm and their, you know, and their lives as such. So,
well, it's probably the fact that it's a great story, because I think a great story doesn't matter if you're a male or a female or a bear or a whale or whatever, in this case a fairy, and you know, you just get lost in the story and you just kind of sail through the book. I think that's the mark of a brilliant writer. So did you think your book would turn out the way it turned out when you sat down to create this story?
I don't think I really knew where it was going, to be honest. I very much have to allow the story and the characters to take me on a journey, not the other way around. There are many, as I've come to know, is that every writer works in a completely different manner, and some of them will plot out the start, the middle, the end, or, you know, different elements within it. Whereas I really do have to allow the story to just roll and to just take me where I need to go. Now, granted, there's always research to be done throughout the notes, along the ways and so forth, but no, I never really know where the story is to head. As for me ending up in LA, on the other hand, how that all came about, I did believe that I would eventually get here for the purposes that I'm here. I sort of stated it way back in the beginning when I first started writing The Tear of Eternal Grace. I'd said, I'm going to write, you know, I'm going to write one of the next big blockbusters. And I remember thinking, people sort of, friends and that, saying, whatever, you're an unknown writer, that's never going to happen. But I stuck to my guns. and I did not fall away from my belief that that's what I was going to do. So as to where I end up now, well, I will stick to my belief. And I'll allow everyone else to believe what they like to believe. But I am here, you know, here in LA for a few different reasons, I guess. I am actually attending a literary event that's here, but I'm also meeting with an Oscar-winning producer to talk about my series, The Tear of Eternal Grace, becoming a film franchise.
I think that must happen.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you know all the reasons why it should happen, because you're the author for this, and you already kind of know. I think, you know, and I mean this in the best possible way for anybody who's out there who's done something that really stinks. However, if you're an author in this case and you've written a book that really is good, you know, deep in the deepest part of your gut, I've got something special here, and this is something that I have to do something with. So I think is it easier for you to have that kind of conviction to come all the way here to the United States and to meet these Hollywood producers and going to these literary events, knowing that I've got the next big thing, like the Harry Potter series, or I've got the Hobbit, or the Lord of the Rings, or I've got one of these big things, and that Hollywood loves to eat up, especially when it's so complete as the tier of eternal grace.
Absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, look, I did, and I stuck, like I said, I stuck to my guns. I knew, I knew in my gut. I absolutely believed it with all that I had. And it didn't matter what anyone else said around me. I had it set in my mind. And, you know, like you said, I mean, we all love a good film franchise. You know, what I love about stories, about a series of books is that we create a sort of love affair, so to speak, with a really well-told story. You know, it's one that primes that desired imagination with unending possibilities, and it boasts a wealth of relatable and wantable characters. I mean, you've only got to think back to as far back as, let's say, Dickens. I was trying to think of someone. As far back as Dickens. I mean, it's such a story's success rests upon the virtues and dilemmas of its characters. You know, we all invest in the who long before we invest in the what of the story. It's what unites us, you know, simply because the driving force of human nature is to be accepted, understood, and validated. And I mean, I know personally, for myself, I entertain any book or film genre, provided the characters speak to a sense of myself. You know, like I said, it's the nature of human nature to want to identify and connect with, or to aspire to, a being that is outside of ourselves. And we really feel that's what I've been able to do with this particular story. You know, you've got those incredible fantasy elements. I'm bringing forth this. We're almost, you're at like Twilight. Let's take Twilight for example, just for a second.
Sure.
Twilight basically reinvented the vampire in so many ways, and hands down to, you know, for Mark Morgan picking that up and seeing that. And going forth with Stephanie Meyer's before it was even published, so it was, you know, that was incredible. And I guess what I would love to think is that's what I can do with the fairy, is let's show people, let's reinvent and bring forth this incredible eternal being, which actually is, there is a lot of truth within these beings that I speak of as well. But, yeah, let's show you another side of them that really has never been done before. That's one of my desires.
So, wow. I mean, now I want to go off in 300 different directions with you, but I want to go back to your process as a writer and how you decided to, you know, sit down and do this. I know we kind of talked a little bit about it, but when you get ready to do something like this, you know, and it sounds like you really had a good foundation at the beginning, but do you have a process to your writing? Do you have a special corner of your home? Do you only write at midnight? Do you write, you know, when you have a full stomach or when you're hungry? How do you get the most words out of you in a day? And do you have any goals that you commit to when you're writing a book on how much you're going to write for any given period of time?
Yep, absolutely. You have to. Otherwise, you end up procrastinating, because trust me, I've done that too. What you do? You think, oh, that's okay. I'll get it done next week. It'll be fine. No, well, look, for myself, because I also have my own business. So with a business partner. So between that and my children, quite often my days are very, very full. So for myself, most of my writing is done of a nighttime once the kids are in bed.
Yeah.
So yeah. So quite often I'll write. Between sort of 8 o'clock till about midnight, I'll then try and get a few hours sleep. As long as I get 3 to 4 hours, I function quite well.
And then
I'll get up and do a bit more writing in the morning before the kids are up and at them, and we're, you know, doing school lunches and so forth. As to where I write, that it's either outside. I love being outside. You know, I'm a country girl originally. I'm as Aussie as they bloody come.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I was brought up in the rainforest, so hence my affiliation with the fairies as well. I grew up with the fairies.
Oh, see, so, now it all, I kind of, it's all coming together here. Okay.
And my father was, my father's very, very spiritually grounded. So it brought me up in those elements. You know, I was meditating from knee-high to a grasshopper and so forth. So communicating with otherworldly elements, I guess you could say, from a young age, which was beautiful.
Now, do you find it? Do you write with like a paper and pen, or do you take your laptop out? Or
no,
what's
it? When I began, I actually did write with paper and pen. However, now I find that I need to go straight to my keyboard, only because once you've written it out on paper, you've then got to go put it on the computer anyway, because you need to start going through doing edits and your rewrites,
right.
And you're constantly going, like, I'll get to a particular part of the story and go, oh, but hold on a second, now I need to go back and change that part of the story so that it relates to there. So it's just too difficult doing it. But in saying that, all of my research is, you should see how many notebooks I've got. I have notebooks all over the house, because ideas will come to you at the most inconvenient time. You could be in the bathroom, for example. So I'm literally, if you go to my house, you'll find notebooks in every single room so that you can literally just jump up. Yeah, okay, this morning I woke up at 3:20 a.m.
Oh, goodness.
Something coming to my mind, and I'm like, all right, got to get this written down. So I quickly grabbed my notebook and quickly wrote down a few things that I had going through my head. But, that's very much how I work.
I love that. That tickles me to no end. And because I'm a big notebook writer myself, and so, I mean, I don't have them all over the place, but I have them in a couple of key strategic places. So if I've got to write something down, I know exactly where I'm headed. And so I love hearing that's something that you do. Now, when you got ready to write the book, The Tear of the Eternal Grace, again, it's a trilogy available on Amazon.com, and you can go buy the books on Kindle format tonight. There's also a hardcover edition of The Tear of Eternal Grace that's available as well. But did you come up with the plot or the characters first, and how did that shape the story for you?
For myself, it was the characters that actually sort of, I think the characters sort of came to me. Establishing a character-driven foundation prior to crafting the cohesive mythology of the narrative, to me, that sort of worked a lot better. For me, that was kind of my storytelling 101, so to speak. But as I said, that's different for everybody. As it was for myself. I mean, again, you're going to go back to, like I said, the first book being that it was a catharsis. So Tatiana Grace was very much this woman who I aspired to be. So that's where she kind of came from, and how sort of learned.
Did you know when you're writing book one it was going to be a trilogy?
Actually, I did, yes. Yeah. I knew that it was going to be three books, and at that stage I didn't realise that I was going to continue from there. So as I spoke of, I'm presently writing the first book to the Tear of Nexus series. So, and that is literally just, it goes on from 9 years after the last book finishes in the first trilogy.
Oh, man.
I didn't realise it would actually keep going, but it's amazing. And that's what I love. It's such an incredible journey for any writer. Like I said, we live in those two separate worlds. And now, not only do I get to play with the fairy, but I also get to play with the ancient mythology of the Egyptian gods and goddesses from the pre-dynastic times as well. Because we started to see a little bit of that in book three. And now I'm really being able, so that's been an amazing journey as well, having, you know, I've been literally living and breathing these Egyptian gods and goddesses as well as my fairies for the last so long. And it's just amazing. It really is such a beautiful journey.
So how do you do the research for both your first series and now your second series? Where do you go down to your public library? You just search the internet? Do you have, groups that you go to?
You name it, I've probably done it.
Okay.
So, I remember, like, yes, absolutely. I've done the libraries. I've done the, you do your research online. I've made phone calls. I even went down, there was this particular scene in book two of the Tear of Eternal Grace series, and that was actually, it had taken place within a hospital on Earth. And there were different elements within it that I didn't understand myself. I couldn't grasp the whole concept of exactly what, okay, if, if this procedure happened, what would that create? I actually went to an ER. So I went down to the hospital and actually spoke to a doctor and sat down there with a notebook and, you know, and pen, and got him to sort of talk me through the process of, okay, if she had these type of injuries, this is what would be expected, da-da-da-da-da. So, you've just got to, you know, you've got to be open to anything and everything, really.
Absolutely, you know, and because I mean, I think that just that ends up just making the story that you write not only authentic, but just so much more richer in your description and in how you tell it, especially when you have that firsthand knowledge and say, you know, this is what happens in the ER, and you can describe everything perfectly.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. So, did you have a main goal other than letting this be just like a real cathartic process for you? Did you have a main goal when you were creating this story?
The first book?
Yes.
Or the entire series?
We can say either or both.
Yeah, the first book for me, darling, really was about finding me, you know, because I really had lost who I was. For me, if I sort of give you a little bit of my background and such, is I was, by the age of 11, I was actually dealing with a lot of my own stuff. I had anorexia, bulimia, I went, and then as I got older, I went, you know, I've had depression and anxieties, and I was assaulted at a very sort of a young age as well, and different things like this that I had been through. And so for me, this book really enabled me to tackle those aspects of myself, and so it was actually a little bit hard for me to write some elements within it. But it was also, like I said, although it was scary for me to write, it was also so enlightening. And it enabled, you know, I never, ever, in my 30 plus years, that's all we'll go to, had ever.
Fair enough.
I never liked who I was. And I was an international model going, you know, for quite a few years, but I never could look at myself in the mirror and actually say that I liked the person who looked back at me. And so by the end of book one, I could actually say for the first time in my life, I love me. I love you. You're a pretty cool chick. So that was huge for me, you know, and
so
I'm like, for goodness sake.
Right. Well, as I say, especially from a collection standpoint, you just saved yourself thousands of dollars in therapy, it sounds like, along the way here. So, what do you think it was about that writing process that helped you really take a hard and honest look at yourself? And then what was it about that got you through it? Because it sounds like you've come out of the tunnel at the other end, you know, just far much for the better.
I am, and I still have my days where I, you know, where I struggle. I think we all do to some degree. I'm not perfect, none of us are. But I love the imperfections of who I am. That was probably the biggest learning curve for me, is just loving me for, you know, for what I was. And how I tackled it, some days there were tears, quite a few tears. I guess I just had to go in there, honey, and just go, it's time. It's enough is enough. I've lived in this place of dormant, dark depression and hatred for too long. I don't want to be here anymore. And so I just had to find that strength within to be able to move forward. I was actually very blessed in that I did meet an amazing lady by the name of Jennifer Starlight, and she very much helped me through some very deep soul searching as such. And that did enable me to move forward aspects of myself as well. And yeah. But that was me.
Wow. So is she the person that's also behind the Starlight Children's Foundation?
No, she's not. No, the Starlight Children's Foundation. No, that's different again.
Oh, okay.
No, the Starlight Children's Foundation, they're an organisation, and I know they're also in America as well, but obviously I advocate with the Australian side of things. We've actually got Starlight Day coming up as soon as I get back, actually. So we'll be doing some fundraising and so forth for that. What the Starlight Foundation do is they're an incredible organisation that basically bring wishes. You know, they grant wishes to these very terminally, very ill, terminally ill children. And it's so incredibly beautiful. So what I like to do is obviously to do my bit when I can and help to raise funds to be able to, you know, to support those families, because a lot of them, they, you know, all of their money and their emotional as well being goes into trying to, you know, be there for their child. And to be able to know that you can be part of something that they've got to look forward to. A lot of these really sick kids, they have, a lot of the hospitals have a starlight room. And you hear it, I've heard the story from quite a few mums who have got, you know, little ones. I'm going to cry just talking about this, sorry. Who have got little ones that have, you know, have cancer and so forth. And to them, the one thing that they have to look forward to is to go to the starlight room and talk to Captain Starlight. And then we grant the wishes by, you know, they grant wishes by allowing the kids and their families to, let's say, you know, go down to the Gold Coast, for example, and enjoy a week away, you know, go to the snowy mountains or wherever it may be. So I love to support that. But I also do, we've recently, myself and my business partner as well, because it's something that is, very, I guess, strikes a chord within us for many reasons, is we're also becoming more and more involved with a sister in Australia. It's a newer organisation, but they actually deal with domestic violence and assault. And so that's something else, as I said, that we are wanting to advocate and really help, you know, help these women and children who. And sometimes men as well, but to enable them to sort of get back on their feet.
Thank you for doing that. That's a great testimony just to who you are as a person, Tanya. Can I ask, you know, outside of doing the projects like the Starlight Foundation and writing, and you have your day job, which we haven't even talked about, we'll talk about next week when we visit, and your kids, do you find much time to do anything else just for you? And if you do, what is it and what are you passionate about?
I'll be honest, I don't get a lot of time for myself. When you're a single, any other single mum out there, or even mothers just in general, they'll completely understand with me. Your children very much take up majority of your time.
Sure.
So, you know, I get as much done whilst they're at school, and then of an afternoon you end up becoming a glorified taxi driver whilst you drive them from one extracurricular activity to another. So it is hard for me to get my time. When I can, though, I enjoy a bit of dance, so I don't mind, you know, shaking my booty, so to speak.
There we go.
For me, I know it is on the writing aspect of things, but I really enjoy writing poetry as well. So that's another little thing I like to do. And my daughter is trying to get me into rock climbing at present.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave that for you. You and I will not be doing that together. Do you have any kind of description for what a downtime might be for you? You know, it just doesn't, I mean, your life sounds very full and very rich and rewarding, but do you have any Calgon take me away, you know, where you just sit in the bathtub or go to a spa or anything like that and just kind of, you know, turn the monitor off?
Okay. For me, it's one of two places. It's either in our great mother's oceans, so going down to the beach and, you know, whether it be surfing, I don't mind getting on the surfboard, or just sitting in the waves and just taking some deep breaths and just allowing her, you know, her waves to sort of roll over you and to just wash away any of the adversities and so forth, and just to bring you back into yourself. To me, that's, you know, that's so important as well. So if I do, yeah, it would be there or in the rainforest as well.
Both sound great.
Yeah, they would be my two places where I get to just I get to ground myself. I get to be me, and I can kind of let the whole world just flitter away and just be in that moment.
Now, can you do me a favor? I have not been to Australia yet, and it seems like with every single guest we have on the show, and I don't know what's happening with the continent of Australia, but we've had so many fantastic, awesome guests, and they all seem to share just this great kind of light or being about them, and it just makes me want to come down there and hang, probably not even come back, but I didn't say that, but I want to go down and have an extended vacation. Can you describe what it's like to live there compared to, you know, you're up here in Los Angeles now for your meetings and your book events. What's life like down under that we should know about? Because, you know, we see like the Paul Hogan movies and the Men at Work video from 30 years ago, and we think that's Australia, and we don't know any different.
I live in the hinterland, so I do have the kangaroos that jump, you know, through your front yard and so forth. The koalas are in the trees in my backyard. So those elements are true, which are just stunning, are absolutely, you know, it's just gorgeous. Where I grew up, though, was actually in far north Queensland, and that is just beautiful. So that's right up the top end of Australia. And far north Queensland is where the rainforest meets the sea. So not only have you got the lush tropical rainforest, but you've also got the Great Barrier Reef. And that in itself is, you know, it's incredible. So if you ever go up that way, you've got to get to the Great Barrier Reef. It's absolutely stunning out there.
And how close are you to the beach?
To the beach? For myself, because I presently live on the Gold Coast, so that's still in Queensland. And from the hinterlands west, well, I'm still only about half an hour away from the beach itself.
Oh, so you're really close. Okay, that's, yeah, easy.
Absolutely, yeah. And the beaches on the Gold Coast, they're divine. They're absolutely divine. I mean, that's where they have some of the best world surf competitions there, and they've done. But depending on where you go along the beach, it can, you know, it's so tranquil as well. So, no, Australia is such a unique part of the world, and I love that we're kind of cut off from the rest of the world as well. We kind of, yeah. But, no, it's a beautiful place. If anyone has yet to be there, absolutely, it's got to be number one on your list.
Okay, you're now number one on my list, so there we go. I've got to come down and visit. So, okay, let me ask, we're getting ready to kind of like wind down our time here. We've probably got about another 5 or 7 minutes left. And I don't want to say in a recap, because I just call this like part one, because you are just so fascinating. But if we could ask you some, I don't say personal questions, but things that, you know, kind of speak to who you are as a person and make you interesting as an author, outside of your kids or loved ones, you know, because maybe you have some pets. I've got 5 dogs, so for me it'd be like outside of my dogs. What would you like to take with you into your next life?
What would I like to take with me into my next life? Oh my goodness, I don't think I've ever been asked that before. I don't know. Probably my. Am I allowed to say people?
We'll count people as part of your loved ones, assuming that they're going to be, you know, taking the journey with you.
Okay, I'd say then my crystals, actually, which is might be a bit unusual, but
no.
Yeah.
So do you like crystals? We could have another whole show on crystals. Oh, my gosh. So what is your favorite crystal?
Yeah, I do. They're very much a part of who I am, as they are as a fairy as well. So they are. What I'm doing with my business partner, we're actually just about to launch it as well in the next few months. With Tear of Eternal, we are... One of our lines is a jewelry line, and it's all elements of crystal and silver.
I love that.
Yeah, it's very unique. It's all no one piece is the same as the next. I'm working with a couple of incredible, amazing Australian designers alongside, and some of the stuff that we're coming up with is just it's breathtaking, absolutely
okay.
breathtaking.
I'm going to tell you, not ask. Well, I'm really going to ask. You must come up with like a men's line also.
Yes.
How cool. I can't wait. So I'm going to be your first American customer. I'm just telling you that right now. So get ready. Set up that PayPal because we're going to do it. Do you have a favorite stone or crystal that you like to either hold in your hand or work with? Like right now, I've got a big cylinder of shungite that I hold. I've got, and this is while I'm doing the show, and I've got a jasper. I've got a great crystal ball that's here. I've got some, you know, jasmine, you know, citrine, and I've got a bunch of things just, you know, around me. But if I showed you my wall of rocks, you'd think I've lost my mind. But I'm a big fan.
For me, Larimar has always been an incredible, I was always attracted to that, and it sort of spoke to me very much so. For those of you who don't know Larimar is a stone of soft, soothing blues, kind of calming turquoise, has white streaks through it as well that sort of, looks a little bit like waves type thing going through it. And it actually brings the ancient wisdom of Atlantis and the healing powers of the dolphin to harmonize the body and soul through that. But it is the embodiment, you know, of the sea and the sky energies. So it's incredibly healing. It's very grounding for myself. There's a lot of incredible properties within that piece. So I'd say that would be my favorite.
And just for everybody who's listening, I've looked up Larimar on Amazon. It's a 5/8 inch to a 1 inch piece is $18.80 with free shipping and handling from a particular vendor. But it's a beautiful
stone. You can only mine it in the Caribbean islands, and there isn't that much. Yeah, they're running out. So unfortunately, dug up a little bit too much of it. Unfortunately, as beautiful it is to have a piece, it's also sad to think that there isn't going to be too much of it left. So it is becoming rarer and rarer as time goes by.
Get it now. We won't tell anybody to go buy Larimar today because you'll go get the stock and then you make great jewelry out of it so we can buy it from you.
I'm doing pieces with Larimar stones. Yes, so... I'll have some stunning pieces.
Awesome. Hey, can you tell me about one really defining moment in your life?
One very defining moment in my life. That's easy. The birth of my children.
How fantastic is that?
That would be the absolute most. My kids are, honey, they're my best friends. You know, my son is, like I said, my son is 12. He's just started high school, which is scary in itself. And I've got two beautiful girls. They're twins. And they're my best friends. I'm struggling now being away from them. I'm here in LA for 2 weeks, and little secret, I kind of cried myself to sleep last night. I miss them. I really miss them.
Are you able to do any type of FaceTime or Skype with them at all?
I do, and it helps for a moment, but then you hang up on them and you're like, I want to cuddle.
Right, yeah. Or are they at the point where they're like, Mom, come on. Are they still good?
No, they're actually, my son is starting to have his time now, being that he's almost to those teenage years now. So he has brief moments, but in general, my kids are actually, they've got such a beautiful balance. You know, especially my son, he's such a boy's boy, loves all the sports and everything else. But at the same time, he has the most loving and giving energy, you know, loving and giving heart. And he soaks up mummy's love as much as I soak up his. So I am very blessed in that essence.
What a, You are just such an amazing lady, Tanya. I can't wait to visit with you on Tuesday. After the show, or you know, sometimes between now and Tuesday when we're going to visit, we'll figure out where that's going to be. But can you do me a favor as we get ready to wrap up? Well, by the way, everybody, again, Tanya's Amazon shopping page and author page is on the show page. You can go see that tonight. You can also follow Tanya on Twitter. There's a link for you to click to follow her as an author as well, so you can stay abreast of all the cool things that she's working on. But, Tanya, can you do me a favor? As we get ready to wrap up tonight, can you give some words of wisdom to people who have not yet taken that first step as an quote-unquote author? What advice would you give somebody who's thinking about, you know, boy, I've always wanted to do this, or I don't know what to do? What do you say to people like that?
Where do we start?
That'll take another hour. Sorry.
That would take another hour. No, look, the biggest thing is, as I said, is you just need to start believing in you. Stop worrying about what everyone else is going to think. And that for me is the hardest thing to overcome is to, you know, to not be worried about what everyone else is going to think. If it is, that can be a very big downfall. But no, believe in yourself, because you know what? Whether you reach one person or whether you reach 1 million person, you have touched a soul out there. You have allowed your story to be heard, and that is the most beautiful gift that you can ever give.
Beautiful answer. Beautiful answer. Everybody, Tanya Elizabeth has been our VIP special guest star. She's live here in Los Angeles from Australia. So if you are going to, do you have any book events that you can talk about real quick?
This weekend there is the LA Times Festival of Books. That's at the USC.
I'm going to be there on Saturday.
Sorry?
I'm going to be there Saturday.
Oh, there you go. Big hugs all the way.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to blurt that out, but I was like, I can't believe it. I'm going to be there. Yeah, I'm going to go see Mr. Billy Idol at 3:40. What time are you speaking or appearing, or where can I find you there?
No, I won't be speaking, but you will find me there. I'll be wandering about, and I'll be doing a few book signings and so forth as well. So,
we'll chit-chat about that. I'm so excited. I can't believe that.
Just look for the tall blonde Aussie. You'll probably hear me laughing before anything else.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, okay. So I'm so sorry. I need to apologize. I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just so excited that how ironic. Okay. Any other events that you want to plug real quick?
No events, but I will actually plug the Tear of Eternal website, which is www.tear, as in step, T-I-E-R, so tearofeternal.com.au. And there are links that will take you directly to Amazon and that as well. But it will give you, it'll also give you a little bit more insight into who I am and also into the books themselves. The YouTubes are on there for this, so the actual book trailers are on there as well. And that'll also be the site that once the jewelry line is up and going, which will happen, as I said, within the next few months, will be the site where everyone can head to as well.
Perfect. Okay, everybody. Support the Tanya Elizabeth empire as it continues to grow. And this
Absolutely.
Is Carrie Buchanan. He was a recent guest on the Friday Night Dance Party with our own Mary Lou from Brisbane. So, Mary Lou, thanks again for making the introduction. And I'm going to put a little Carrie Buchanan on. This is called Shining Star. This one's for you, Tanya, and I will chat with you post-show. Everybody else will see you live Friday with Sasha's Block at a special start time, 5 p.m. They are promoting their brand-new album, Heart on Fire. We're going to be doing a world premiere of their album tomorrow at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, so tune in for that. And everybody else, don't drive distracted. We'll see you tomorrow.
Around my heart. You've been listening to
Rated G Radio.